Diana Sinatra, welcome to Now's the Time.
Thank you for inviting me.
Diana, your mother was a famous Hungarian actress, Eva Bartok. You were born in London. Tell us about the circumstances, that time of your birth that you know of.
I was born in 1957, and in that time it was very difficult for a single mother to have a child. She decided not to name who the father was, had faith in being able to deal with it herself, had a very loving mother to help her. The press was inundating her with questions, and it was an emotional time, and she wanted me so badly that actually pushed her through the pain and the hardship, and I, you know, came into this world October 7th.
Now, I've read your mother's book, and it's a fascinating story. She certainly had a lot of courage. And at that time, she was advised by doctors to have an operation which was going to put your life at risk. Tell us about the circumstances surrounding that.
She was always a woman of courage, and coming from the Holocaust situation, I think she had a great need to live and to make things happen. And she found out she was pregnant, and she was taken to a doctor to have a checkup, and they told her that she had cysts on her womb and that she had to have an abortion. And she actually went as far as to be checked in to a hospital, a private hospital, to have this happen. And she got there. She checked herself in at the very last second. She pulled out, much to the chagrin of her very dear friend who arranged this for her, walked out of the hospital. And she was, at that time, she was a member of a spiritual group called Suwud. And she went to the leader of this group and told him about the situation. And he basically said to her, "You'll be fine. Don't worry. Have faith. Your child will be fine and you will be fine." And that was it.
It's an amazing story of courage from the first part of the book, when she was dealing with the war in Budapest and certainly the town outside of Budapest where she lived. It didn't surprise me when she was faced with that illness that she dealt with it in the way she did. It was just some incredible stories of their wandering around German-filled Budapest at the time, and of course the Russians approaching as well.
And then the Russians, yes.
Tell us about the first time when you were told that Frank Sinatra was your father.
Well, that was sort of interesting, because my mother had an incredible range of taste in music: Bach, Beethoven, Puccini, Dean Martin, Nat King Cole, and everything. And she had a lot of albums on the floor stacked one against the other. And as a three-year-old, you know, toddlers just run around wild. And she was playing, I don't remember which album it was, she was playing one of Frank's albums. And as, you know, I happened to run into the room, and just, I guess, this is hearsay because this is what my mother told me, I can't remember when I was three, but walked over. I could have picked any album, and picked Frank's album up with his picture on the cover, walked up to her, toddled up to her, and said, "Daddy." Now, you know, there was no father figure in the, you know, in the household, and daddy was not in my vocabulary, and I could have heard it from somewhere else, but it was just too strange, and her mouth just fell open.
And this is around about 1960?
59. And she was gobsmacked, and she just had to say yes. And it was such an emotional moment for her, because she couldn't figure out how I could figure it out. And so that was it from then on.
It's just a natural
instinct. It was a given, yeah.
From your perspective, I mean, when I ask the question about fondest musical memory of Sinatra, which is what I'm about to ask you, that's what you've really got to go on, isn't it? Records.
That's it. I mean, you know as much about Frank as I do. In fact, you probably know a hell of a lot more than I do. Yeah, that's it. I mean, fondest musical memories. That would be a hard question to answer, because the memories are so huge and his music is so big. Not only his music, you know, but the collaboration. Mm. His voice is just magical. I think anything he did, really, except in my opinion, the later years, was just touched with magic.
Diana, did your mother ever tell you why she named you Diana?
Well, she actually didn't name me Diana. as I mentioned earlier, she was a member of a spiritual group called Subud, and the fellow that headed the group gave two names because she didn't know if she was going to have a girl or a boy. And if it was going to be a girl, it would be Diana, and if it was going to be a boy, it would be Donald. Thank God it was Diana. It was directed at me, you know, with the knowledge of who she was and her history and how he felt about the birth and everything, and he knew exactly the names that needed to be adhered to the infant that was born.
Did Frank ever support your mother financially?
No. She never asked for a penny.
And he never provided with any without any asking?
Well, no, because he didn't know I was alive until I was 15. So, and at that point, she could have, you know, pushed it. At the time that I was born, she was a star in her own right, earning megabucks.
She approached Sinatra first in, what, 69, 70, was it?
It was earlier than that. I think it was after I was born. She made a phone call and he was in town and they were going to get together and she had the intention of sharing the information, but it never worked out.
I wonder if he ever really knew there was, you know, that possibility was there and was deliberately avoiding the inevitable.
I don't see how. You know, it was, their meeting was brief and they were both doing films. Mum had the contract to do Doctor in Stalingrad in Europe, so she went from Hollywood back to England. So, I don't...
It was about a three-month affair, was it?
Well, yeah, about 3 months. They were in close proximity. And it was very private, you know, nobody knew about it. He was married at the time, and so was she.
Your mother wrote to Frank when you were about 15 years old.
Yeah.
What was the response? Can you describe the response and how that made you feel?
Well, we had to go through his lawyer, Mickey Rudin, because to ensure that the letter and the pictures and everything got through to him. And there was a span of maybe about a month. We waited and we waited and we waited. And we got a letter back from Mickey saying that he had passed the information on to Frank. And Frank had sent an apology saying he'd read the letter and he appreciated the situation, but he couldn't get involved and that he already had children and that he was having quite a bit of problems with his existing other children and wasn't interested. And at the time, it was probably the most painful thing as a teenager, 15-year-old, who was just longing for acknowledgement. I thought I was a really good person. You know, I was pretty and young and talented, and what was wrong with me? You know, I got this letter back saying no, he didn't even want to attempt to meet. It just about killed me. In fact, I had about a month after we got the letter, I had a really bad car accident in which I received head injuries, and I could have died. I really don't know how I made it through that time, except that it wasn't my time to go. But it was horrible. It was really horrible.
You saw Frank actually perform live in 1981. Tell us about what was going on for you emotionally when you were at that concert. It was at the Hollywood Bowl, I believe.
It was. It was tremendous. It was quite frightening, actually. And I was pulled along by a very dear friend of mine, Maggie, who was a British producer, quite a bit older than I was at the time. She said, come on, girl, we're going to take you to see your father. We went, and we were to the left of the stage, a few rows up, and so quite close to him. It was just the most moving experience because it was a mirror image. The movements, the look, the smile, the hands. It was the first time I'd actually been up close and, well, not personal, but... And it was surreal. And of course, there were tears, you know, and there was a hope, there was actually hope that she could get us backstage and introduce me, and no, that didn't happen. So that eluded me yet again. So yeah, that was just an amazing experience. And he... Such a consummate professional, you know. Wow, it was great.
At this stage, you had, or Eva certainly had, your mother had already written to Frank once. Is that correct, or was that twice up until 1981?
Well, it was twice, but the second time was due to my pushing the issue.
Sinatra is widely regarded as the 20th century's greatest popular singer. Diana, how do you rate Sinatra the singer?
Well, it's my personal opinion that Frank was put on this earth for that particular reason. I mean, God wanted him to sing, and there is never, ever going to be another Frank Sinatra. Frank was put on this earth to sing, and that's how I feel about it.
One of the reasons why I ask you that question is because there was a survey done in America quite recently, and it's interesting to receive the response. The responses, Frank Sinatra actually topped the response. 21% said if they had to choose one singer as the best male singer of the 20th century, it would be Frank Sinatra, more than double of Elvis Presley, and in fact coming in at fourth place was Luciano Pavarotti, and even Bing Crosby coming in at sixth place.
Yeah, and I think what came out of Frank's mouth was what he felt in his heart, how he put himself into those lyrics, and his ability to just form the words and the timing was just incredible.
Harry Connick Jr., when he was making his meteoric rise, mentioned that he'd love just a fraction of Sinatra's lungs at the time, because 25 and 30 second phrases without taking a breath.
With all the alcohol and the cigarette smoking on top of it. I mean, God, can you imagine?
You know, even the number of Grammy Awards that Sinatra won, and really 18 years of his best years were already past him before Grammys even started.
That's right.
And he won 9 Grammys in total from 1958 onwards. And really, a lot of the critics would argue probably the first 18 years were his best 18 years. One can only imagine how many Grammy Awards he would have won if they'd have started back in 1939. Frank's on record as describing himself as the supreme optimist. And Deanna, you were recently quoted in an interview that you took Frank's silence as a positive, that he was not denying you that you were his daughter.
Mm.
Other than being an optimist, what other personality traits do you think you share with your father?
Well, I don't suffer fools easily. And I don't know if you know baseball at all, but the old term 3 strikes and you're out pretty much applies to me. You cross me the third time, you're never going to get a look in again.
From what I've read about him, yeah. In fact, you mightn't even get 3 strikes. Deanna, you're the daughter of entertainment royalty and certainly one of the most powerful men in the world when you were born. Do you ever feel underappreciated?
Entertainment royalty. Oh, my God. Can anyone live up to that? Do I ever feel unappreciated? No, not really. I mean, I've made a few mistakes in my life, as we all have. And I think given the ups and downs and all that I've been through, I think I've done a pretty damn good job. So, no, I don't think I feel underappreciated.
At 15 and you were without a father, I mean, how difficult is that to adjust to life without a father at that age?
Well, it's not just at that age. It's followed me through to now. As you know, girls need, as a father of a daughter, you yourself, girls need their dads, and especially in the early teenage years. In fact, I think they need their dads all the time through to adulthood. And it certainly colored the way that I chose my relationships, choices I made when I was younger. In my early dating years, I ended up going out with men who were sometimes 20 years older than I was. I've got a hole in my soul that is in the shape of my father. Had it then, have it now. And it's big.
Of course, you tried to get into show business yourself in some movie roles.
Mm-hmm.
What challenges did you face when you were doing that?
When I first went into show business, my last name was Jurgens, and Kurt, you know, had been a huge star. And when they got Jurgens and Bartok, you know, as my so-called parents, it got the foot through the door. But a lot more was expected of you because your parents were famous. And people don't believe in nepotism. They look down on that. And so, therefore, you've really got to raise the bar and try even harder, you know, than Joe Schmo next to you at auditions. So a lot of people think, oh, yeah, you come from a famous family and blah, blah, blah. It doesn't work that way. You know, it's actually the opposite.
You've said that following the death of Frank, you'd received many messages of condolences from friends and supporters around the world. Do you share any friends with the Sinatra family now? And how aware are the Sinatras of you?
No, we don't share any friends. And how aware they are of me? Well, it's like David and Goliath. I'm David and they're Goliath. I think they're very aware of me. And this whole thing should have come to a head a lot earlier. You know, we should have at least had some sort of a meeting. I'd never gone after any kind of money. My mother never went after any money. I just want a family. I just want a semblance of a family. Or to find out, you know, that there isn't a family I want out there. But there's this huge big question mark, and I'm sure they're aware I'm alive.
Why do you think that barrier is there? Given that you have said many, many times that you're not interested in money, and certainly your mother had proved that, why do you think now that even Frank's family as we know it still have that barrier up and still don't want to make that connection?
Do you want it honestly?
Mm-hmm.
I think they're paranoid, totally paranoid. And I think the environment that they live in feeds that paranoia. There's always, because of that, the huge wealth, I think it stems from that, you know. And I just feel so sorry, you know, for them, if we don't give each other this chance while we're still alive.
Diana Sinatra.
That's me.
Growing up without a father figure, how difficult was it to become a parent in that situation?
I made the conscious decision to change the pattern. I decided that I was going to have a normal family, you know, mother, father, kids, dog, two cars. No, I just didn't want to repeat history. I was fortunate enough to find a man. We got married. I have two sons, Oliver, who's 17, Damon, who's 13, both absolutely magical children. Their father is an exceptional father, is on board, you know, still hands-on. They've had the continuity of both mother and father there, even though we're not together anymore. And I'd like to say, guys, thanks for choosing me as your mom. I love you.
What made you call Sydney, Australia home, Deanna?
It's God's country. It is. I mean, you know, it's funny because this may sound a bit cliched, but a lot of Australians take Australia for granted, and it is one of the most special places in the world. And take it from me, I've traveled the world, I know.
When did you first come here?
1995, November the 11th. That's when we arrived. But I first came here when Oliver was about 5 months old in 1988, and we just fell in love with the place. That was it. And then at the time, we were living in California with all the gang wars had started, and kids were going to school wearing the wrong color, getting shot, and we just felt that wasn't the future for, you know, raising a family. And we were so lucky to be able to finally get into Australia.
Now, I wanted to ask you about the element of loneliness that I guess comes in a situation like yours where you really have been alone. Apart from your two sons, your mother passed away in the same year that Frank died.
Mm. 3 months after he died, yeah. I'm basically orphaned, yeah, and I have no extended family, which doesn't sit comfortably with me at all.
How are you coping with that situation in this context?
Well, how does one cope with it? You have to live with it. I wish it could be some other way. I would love to have siblings. All my friends are scattered all over the world. I've got friends here, but It's a strange thing being a world child, you know, and not having roots. Although I've been in Australia for 10 years, that's really nothing compared to a lot of people who have actually grown up here and have had those roots and have those backups that they take for granted. And I don't have any of that, and I wish I did.
The diversity of music on Deanna's bookshelf.
Wow.
Tell us, on Deanna's CD shelf. Tell us a little bit about that.
As I mentioned before, I was raised on different kinds of music. Classical music. I love world music. I love jazz. I love blues. Joni Mitchell, Crosby, Stills and Nash, The Beatles, The Stones, Eminem. Love Eminem. Love hip-hop. love what's happening right now.
It's the only thing I don't listen to is country.
Except for Willie Nelson and Dolly Parton.
I've been speaking with Diana Sinatra, the daughter of Eva Bartok, the Hungarian and Hollywood actress, and Frank Sinatra. Thanks again, and good evening,
Thank
Diana.
You.